This is 5-on-3. Center ice for all things Islanders, Rangers, and all news across the NHL on WFUV Sports.
Hello and welcome to 5-on-3, WFUV Sports' best, if not only, hockey and NHL podcast. I am James Burley, joined by Nick Palmer and Tucker Austin, as we break down what is to be the final week of the NHL season in 2023-2024. We are approaching Game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals between the Florida Panthers and the Edmonton Oilers. And like the Undertaker, risen from the ashes, is this Edmonton team. Two wins in a row, and in high fashion, they took out the Panthers 8-1, an absolute drubbing in Game 4 on home ice. And then they go out to Sunrise, and a convincing but albeit nail-biter of a game. They win 5-3. I think the better team on the day won. If you're the Edmonton Oilers, they took their chances when they needed to. But are they a better team than the Panthers? They're going to go home to Rogers Place tomorrow night at 8 p.m. That's Friday night, June 21st. And if they win that, then we've got a winner-take-all Game 7 on Monday in what could be the greatest comeback in the history of the NHL playoffs. Or do we see the Florida Panthers take things home in 6 games? That's what we're going to be talking about today. But before we get into everything, let me introduce my hosts. I'm James Burley, but I'm joined by a fellow rising senior here at Fordham University College Rose Hill, and he's a fellow beat reporter for the New York Islanders. He's a bit of an expert in these things. Nick Palmer, how you doing? He's got the fisherman shirt.
Yo, what's up? Exciting hockey time. Stanley Cup playoffs, of course. Tuck and I had a great episode last week discussing the first 3 games. It's going to be less fun for me talking about these next two because I had Florida just completely dominating the series, which they have not been dominating the last 2 games, unfortunately. And I think I called it at the end of last episode, Tuck. I think I said the series was over.
We both did. I think we were both on this. We were both in the same boat. And now we're both sinking.
Anyway, Tucker Austin, ladies and gentlemen, how about it?
I'm doing well, except for the fact that that episode is blowing up in our face right now. But, you know, what's good for hockey is that we now have an exciting series that's quickly turning into an absolute classic. If this actually goes to 7, it's going to be one of the best Stanley Cup final series probably ever, just based on the fact that the Oilers brought it all the way back and the way that they beat the Panthers in Game 4 so aggressively. It's just like the back and forth has been insane. We saw the humanity of Sergei Bobrovsky somehow. Like, it's insane. A lot of insane hockey and a lot to unpack today.
Yeah, and we're going to circle back to the Cup because we've got some off-season maintenance issues to discuss, really, with some teams involved, some big names involved. We're going to start on the West Coast, actually, because we do have a resident Los Angelista in here. I don't know how you say
Angelino.
Okay, we got a little Angelino here and okay. Nikki Palm. I had to add the Enye. It's Nikki Palms, the palm trees of Los Angeles. And he's going to talk about the shipment of Pierre-Luc Dubois out of the city limits. What do you say, Nick?
Thank God. It's high time that this guy got out of Los Angeles. He was a tumor on the face of the Los Angeles Kings. He was on contract for 7 years, and after 1 year, it was very apparent that this guy did not fit in, not only with the style of play, not only was he underwhelming on the stat sheet, he was underwhelming to the eye test, and apparently he was a complete, I can say this, he was a complete douchebag in the locker room. No one really likes him. And that stretches back to his days in Winnipeg, stretches back to his days in Columbus when, you know, he asked constantly for trades. And that's never a good look. Rob Blake said, I don't think I did a good enough job integrating him into the right roles. Yeah, because it's impossible. This guy sucks. Just on every level, personality-wise, for his pay grade, he is actually really bad for what you're paying him. Nothing pops out about this guy besides his bad attitude. And thank God the Kings got rid of him. And Darcy Kemper is not a great goaltender. I'm not under any delusions here, but it works. The Kings had no goaltenders on contract for this upcoming year, which means they had to go shopping. So you get Darcy Kemper in the trade. That's fine. He's probably going to be your starting goaltender. I'm all right with that. The best part is you're not paying any of Dubois' salary. That's the number one thing, is they're not retaining anything on that monstrous salary. I don't know what Washington is doing. My nightmare is that they're going to turn him around and he's going to be like the guy that everyone thought he would be on Winnipeg, but I'll believe it when I see it.
Well, if I can say one bit of silver lining that might pump you up a little bit, I mean, Darcy Kemper did backstop the Colorado Avalanche to a Stanley Cup way back in the day of 2022, which is, check your calendars, not that long ago. I'm not saying he is a Stanley Cup caliber goaltender right now or next year, but I'm just trying to lift the spirits up. You got rid of someone you just labeled as a tumor to the face of the team. So, Nick, glad we can start the show
right here
on a high note. Right,
right. You can't see it.
The right frontal cortex.
It's just glaring. Like you can't look at the Kings without seeing the Dubois tumor. And now it's gone. The patient is cured.
One season.
To your point,
long.
James, he actually had a stellar year with the Avalanche that season. 57
Absolutely.
Games, 37 wins, and a 9.21 save percentage. And then the next year in Washington, he had a 9.08, and then he only played 33 games last year with an 8.90, but that's probably sample size issues. Yeah, like you were saying, very serviceable goaltender, and for a team that needed to go shopping, it's not a bad pickup at all.
And look, this is all jokes to start the show. PLD has been the butt of many memes lately as well. So, Nick, we wanted you to get your piece on that and get it out of the way. So we are done with that. We're moving on. We're going to talk some Rangers news real quick because I described him before the show as a beast in the playoffs. I'll dial it back in a little bit. A impressive performer in the playoffs on the bottom six for the New York Rangers. Barkley Goodrow got out of his contract, put on waivers, immediately picked up by San Jose, and it's caused a bit of a fire in the New York Rangers hockey sphere. The Rangers, they end up getting a favor from the Sharks in terms of contract, picking up a player off their books, but it kind of seems to have gone against the wishes of Barkley Goodrow, who had a 15-team no-trade clause that included teams that are described as I had the quote in front of me now, something about them being inferior and not being a contender. Those sorts of teams were on his no trade clause, as much as half the league was on it. So you have to assume that the Sharks might have been on it, or if not, they were close to being on it. And to be dropped and immediately picked up by San Jose started to open some eyes, and Barkley Goodrow reportedly is not happy about how this went down. So I guess this opens up a whole discussion about the ethics of a move like this. Should it be legal? But Tucker, I'll go to you, man. If you're Barkley Goodrow, you've got to be fuming at the fact that you just got dropped from your contract with the Eastern Conference finalist, and now you're going to the basement of the NHL all the way in San Jose.
And especially, like you mentioned, with his playoff performance, to be bouncing off of that, but then being shown like basically zero appreciation for that performance by the Rangers. Mm-hmm. And if I'm Barkley Goodrow, yes, I am absolutely steaming mad. But if I'm the Rangers, they might not have found a team to trade him to that wasn't in his clause. Like, they might have just had their hands tied. And they wanted the payroll. They needed the cap space. They couldn't send him anywhere that he wanted to go. So the next best thing, if you're the Rangers GM, is just drop him and have him get picked up somewhere. I think the Sharks, there may have been some collusion. I think we were reading in some of those articles that like the Sharks and the Rangers may have been in contact before the move was made so that the Sharks knew he was going to be available. But like, without that, like, you kind of have to think like San Jose might be doing a favor for Goodrow by picking him up. This was the team that gave him his first shot back in March of 2014. After spending 5 years in the OHL, the Sharks finally gave him an opportunity. And so now he is back in San Jose. I'm sure he's not happy about it, but it seemed like the Rangers just kind of had a poor situation in terms of Barkley Goodrow's contract.
people are calling this a brilliant move from the Rangers. I just think it's like a crappy move. Like that's like
it's exactly. It's like which side are you on, basically? Are you Goodrow's side or the Rangers side?
Yeah.
It's like as an employee, right? Technically, Barkley Goodrow is an employee. He's getting paid to provide a service. To not have rights over your own employment like that can seem a little bit shaky, but this game's a business, and these players are treated like assets at times. It's awful, but I mean, from a contract perspective, I guess you can give credit to the Rangers for this move, but it is cutthroat, and it is incredibly unethical in my view, and I feel for Barkley Goodrow at the moment. The Sharks could be cooking something, though. Macklin Celebrini is coming in, and maybe it it goes their way. Mackenzie Blackwood, Vitek Vanacek. I mean, like that's the goaltending tandem.
That's
dreams.
The exact tandem you want, of course.
It's with a proven record, mind you. Speaking of some goaltenders, we've got some big news. Yeah, flex that hat, Tucker. Big
down there,
Nick,
in Newark.
Don't scoff at this. Don't scoff.
Y'all,
at this.
Y'all are bozos. You guys
bozos.
Are bozos.
We're bozos for being
bozos
excited
with a
that the New Jersey Devils have acquired Jacob Markstrom. We're bozos that the Devils now have an elite goaltender. Markstrom was fifth
elite?
Last year. Oh, yeah, he was fifth last year in goals saved above expected, which is a metric that factors in the difficulty and intensity of the shots that he faced, not just the volume.
That's true.
All right? That's why, yeah, Darcy Kemper had a 9.24 save percentage or whatever it was in Colorado. Was he facing that many difficult shots or that many a game? Probably not. Was Jacob Markstrom facing a lot of rubber, backstopping the Calgary Flames this year? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And did he stand on his head many times in those games? It's proven by the numbers, baby. He's an elite goaltender. For 2 years, he will be contracted by the Devils in exchange for Kevin Vaughn, a 2025 first rounder. Top 10 protected, of course, though. The Devils doing well there. Tom Fitzgerald, I think, did a good job bringing in a goaltender. Corey Schneider was on NHL Network today saying that it was something of a stopgap solution and that it's Jacob Markstrom being 34 years old, only on a 2-year contract. They're going to have to reassess for another goaltender after that. I think that could be true, but let's not forget, you still got young goaltenders marinating. Nico Daws and Akira Schmid have shown in bunches that they can be guys for the future. Jake Allen is going to be part of this tandem. You don't see him being a guy who's going to take any steps, but he'll provide a good job in a 1B, 2A kind of role as a goaltender. But Tucker, I want your opinion on this, especially because, and I get to announce this for the first time, you will be joining me as WFUV Sports' Devils beat reporter for this coming 2024-25 season. I got a phone call from Lou Orlando today letting me know that I could tell you on the air, and he's going to give you a call after the show. So this be
oh,
your first,
let's go.
This be your
that
first
so
bit of
awesome.
Analysis as an official WFUV
wow.
Sports beat reporter.
Well,
what's your take on the new trade for Markstrom?
First off, I want to say thank you for letting me know on the air. That's really awesome.
It's my idea.
I keep getting news dropped on me on 5-on-3. This is insane. But
nice.
To go with for my first analysis, I suppose, as the future beat reporter for the Devils, I love this move for the salary and for like the because the fact that Calgary retains 31.25% of Jacob Markstrom's $6 million a year salary. That keeps the goalie tandem of Allen and Markstrom under $8 million a year, and that's for two really solid goaltenders. And I know, Palmer, you were scoffing at James calling Jacob Markstrom elite, but even if he's not elite, I think the money that they're saving just to have a goalie tandem like this for the next 2 years, it's really good, and it allows for the Devils to go out and try and build that defense because they need D-men in front of Markstrom in order to just help him out. It's been their problem with goalies in the past, like Mackenzie Blackwood or Vitek Vanacek. They didn't have the defense in front of them to help them out. So now with a little more cap space and a little more room to wiggle, I think the Devils can go out and grab a defender or two, maybe, just really strengthen up that defense for a solid, solid goalie tandem at a premium price.
You know what? I shouldn't have scoffed. Markstrom is a talented goaltender. He's, you know, he's getting up there. He's getting up there, but you know, that's okay if you only have him for 2 years. As far as Jake Allen is concerned, I mean, I'm probably pretty sad if I'm him, because he's going into this offseason probably thinking he might get a starting job and then just gets that rug pulled out from under him. So Jake Allen is going to be the backup goaltender. But aren't Dawes and Schmid both free agents? So, I mean, it's unlikely that they're going to get a contract, considering that Markstrom just got the deal. So, and then you also have Kakanen, don't you? So you have three guys. I think all three of them are they free agents?
All three of them are expiring. Dawes, I'm actually not 100% sure, but Schmid and Kakanen for sure. I think Kakanen's gone. Kakanen's going to go somewhere where he can probably be a starter or a tandem starter at for probably a struggling team. Schmid, I think, is a guy you bring back just because, I mean, he's not going to cost much money and can still play at the AHL level. And I don't see him going to a different NHL franchise that's going to give him a shot based on the season he had this year. But these are all things that are still in the early goings of these things. And look, goaltenders marinate at a different rate as NHLers. And this is how we'll segue into our Stanley Cup talk. Markstrom is 34, yes, but he wasn't considered amongst the higher ranks of goaltenders in this league until the past few years, I would say. The same is true about a lot of goalies. We still consider Igor Shesterkin a young goalie in this league, really, and he's in his prime at 28 years old, I want to say now. So while it may seem like a move that's not built for the future, I think there's legs on this for several years down the line. One point of note, though, is bigger goaltenders. Markstrom's 6'6", I think. These goaltenders don't tend to age as well as some of the smaller goaltenders, more agile ones, such as Sergei Bobrovsky of the Florida Panthers, who, while showing
like
signs...
fine wine.
Yes, absolutely, but still struggling, I would say, a little bit, especially in Game 4. There's no denying that, but arguably in Game 5, which is where we are now in real time. Folks, the Edmonton Oilers are awake. They are awake. They're not just awake. They are playing some pretty darn good hockey. They look like they don't just belong in the Stanley Cup, but that they actually might go and take it. Do we think that this Game 6 now at Rogers Place in Edmonton, is Edmonton the favorite now to win this game and send this to 7? Nick?
No.
No.
I refuse to believe the fact that the Edmonton Oilers are going to make this comeback. Florida, game 5 especially, Edmonton had one good period. They had one good period. The rest of the game was all Florida for the next 40 minutes. It looked like games 1 through 3 all over again. They just have to put together just 20 extra little minutes. If Florida can just not collapse, and it doesn't even have to, the best part is, it doesn't even have to, like, just make it the first 40 minutes that you play super well. If you give Edmonton a lead, they will run away with it. If you bury them, they will fall like a house of cards. So as long as Florida can put together a good first period, I see no reason why they don't take this game.
Nick, I want to bring up a certain individual who had a 3-assist performance in Game 5, and I joined in the tag team against him last week. His name is Evan Bouchard, and I at least owe Evan Bouchard a little bit of an apology. I was trying to give him some credit, but I still did call him out for the poor play, but then he puts up 3 assists in Game 5. The Oilers win 5-3. They send it back to Edmonton. And I think the city of Edmonton woke up. I think before Game 4, they realized that, like, their backs are really against the wall now, and this is it. And we saw in Game 4 what happens when the Oilers' backs are fully against the wall. 8-1. The Great Wall of Bob came down. And the Oilers just grabbed all the momentum. To that point, I think they take Game 6, and I think this goes back to Sunrise, Florida, for a decisive Game 7. But I think the Panthers will get it done at home in Game 7.
It's so hard to come back down 3-0 and then lose Game 7, I feel like. If it comes to that, I think I have to jump on the Oilers bandwagon. And if you'll remember, I very much hated the people who were getting on this Oilers bandwagon. I was like, this guys, this is the same deal every year. It follows this pattern. They have this 10-game win streak in the middle of the season after an awful start. They fire the coach midseason. They bring in one new bottom six guy who can kind of rough it up a little bit. They added one more defenseman who is good at skating through the neutral zone, so McDavid doesn't have to every time. And then they put together all these wins, and then they lose in the second round of the playoffs because they're not as well-rounded of a team. But honestly, what I'm seeing is a team that doesn't need to be well-rounded because of this top-end scoring talent, but they are anyway. And now that they've strung together a couple wins and are going back to their place, and you're right, Tucker, the city has woken up. For me, they've got to be the favorite in Game 6. I'm sorry. This Florida Panthers team is the best team, the best hockey team in the league, probably the best team in the world. We're not going to call them world champions like the Celtics, but that's a different discussion for a different time.
Getting fact-checked on that post is crazy.
Hilarious.
A little off-topic, so but it's wild.
That's one of the only good things about like community notes since Twitter became X. But that's also a different discussion for a different time. What the Edmonton Oilers have been able to do in the past two games is nothing short of a miracle, really, when you look at how games 1 through 3 went. You make a great point about not getting buried, Nick, because if the Oilers come out with a great start, that's clearly what gives the Panthers the most problems. They're the best defensive team in the league. They're going to shut you down. They're not going to let you get to the house. If they have a lead, they will nurse it over the finish line like nobody's business. That's how they took care of the Rangers, really. I know they had a couple of high-scoring games, but late in that series, the Rangers couldn't do anything on offense because the Panthers would get on the board first, and that would be that. That's a good way to win hockey games, but if you don't score first, kind of leaves you in the backseat doing nothing. Now, let's bring back the context into this. The Oilers have won 2 in a row. They're coming back home. The city's awake. Who do you think is going to be rearing to go off the red line? Is it going to be the Panthers, who now feel like they might get embarrassed in 3 days? Or is it going to be the Edmonton Oilers, who have their whole city behind them and back-to-back four-point nights from the greatest hockey player in the world, Connor McDavid, who's now got 43 points in the playoffs, is it, or 42? Either way, it's more than PLD had the entire regular season. That much is factual. I have the Oilers winning Game 6, and if they go and do that, how can you bet against them in Game 7?
I mean, they
something
have
that makes me, oh yeah, go
momentum.
Ahead,
no, it's just they have all the momentum right now, and it's just what will they be able to do with that momentum? Because we've seen the Oilers with momentum in the past, and we've seen them fall short. So, just can they keep it going? Like, if they win Game 6, I will agree, it is very likely that they will go on to maybe win Game 7, but they just need to keep the momentum going. If they let the momentum swing back to the Panthers, and if they let – Nick, we talked about this last week. If they let the Panthers control the pace of the game again, they're not going to be able to get over the hump.
You want to know what's beautiful and why I disagree with you? Momentum game to game does not exist. I am a firm believer in that. It does not exist. Not only am I not a firm believer in that, Chris Knobloch is not a believer in that, and Paul Maurice is not a believer in that. In their pressers, Chris Knobloch said, I believe in momentum and that it lasts only from shift to shift. Other than that, from game to game, period to period, I don't think it does. Paul Maurice said, I don't believe in momentum at all. You reestablish your game and come back in the fight. If these people are saying it, I find it hard to believe that game-to-game momentum exists. That said, I think confidence exists from game to game, sure. Momentum, I don't necessarily buy. Because you can have McDavid feeling really good, and that will certainly maybe influence their style of play, but I don't think it can influence how well they're going to play, if that makes sense.
I agree wholeheartedly. But I don't think it's about playing well. I think it's about playing their game, right? Because if that crowd is bumping, and look, this game could be decided in the first period. If Edmonton scores several goals in that first period, they get off to a great jump. They get a power play. The crowd's buzzing. I don't see a way Florida's coming back into the game. But on the same inverse, if the Oilers come out flying, but they're firing shots into the glass and Florida catches them on break on odd man rushes the other way and they go down 1-0, I think they're going to be washed out. So I agree that Paul Maurice and Chris Knobloch are right to say that momentum between games doesn't exist. I mean, we've seen lopsided scores get traded one way or the other, but I don't think they've forgotten what's happened in the last couple of games. And I do think confidence does play a role. And I think the opening period is going to be the most crucial one here. And that's not to say that the Panthers didn't fight in either of the last two games. I mean, the most obvious example is Matty Tkachuk with 17 seconds left, clawing that puck out from the crease.
What a ridiculous
great
play.
Hockey play.
Like, oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Unfortunately, Oliver Ekman-Larsson didn't get the memo that the team was still trying, and it just went to McDavid, who scored, and that was that, icing on the cake. But what I will say to finalize my thoughts on the cup, really, unless we have any more lingering thoughts, maybe score predictions for game six. Tucker, if you want to jump in now.
I do. Yeah, I actually do. Well, sort of two things. One, I want to mention the fact that Draisaitl has points now. So that's pretty huge in terms of the Oilers Stars making noise. But I also want to highlight a guy who we questioned last week.
I think we questioned him throughout the season, if I know where you're going with this.
Stuart Skinner.
This is correct. That's what I was going to say.
I have a very, very interesting stat for you because he played very, very well in game four and equally as well in game five. But Stuart Skinner in the 2024 playoffs in games four through seven of a series is 9-0 with a .939 save percentage and 1.56 goals allowed average. He is filthy when it matters. Big game Stuart is here. And I think if somebody's going to step up in game six and seven, it will be big game Stuart again.
See,
dang.
I was going to say Stuart Skinner, but I didn't have that stat prepared. So I'm so glad you took the words out of my mouth, Tucker. One more thing I will say. The Edmonton Oilers have never lost a Stanley Cup clinching game on home ice. Six times a team could have won it on Edmonton ice, and it's never happened. I mean, the stars are aligning, not the Dallas Stars. The proverbial stars are aligning for this Edmonton Oilers team to defy the odds. It's never happened. It's down from three in the Stanley Cup. Never happened. They could be the first. Nick?
Can I take this opportunity to trash on Darnell Nurse?
Do it.
Because he still sucks. The Oilers might suck, might be good, but Nurse still sucks. He is responsible for almost all of their goals. He's tied with who's he tied with? He's tied with Sam Reinhardt's dad for the worst plus minus in playoffs history.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's really bad.
Yeah. I think it's like minus like 18 or something. I'm not sure.
All right. Well, let's reel this back in because we can call this in just a moment. But do we have any final score predictions for game six? I know Tucker and I are both leaning Edmonton's way. Nick, with who do you have in game six and what?
Cats are winning 4-1.
Cats are winning 4-1.
In Edmonton.
A confident Florida win.
I want Evan Rodriguez putting one in the back of the net. Give me Vladimir Tarasenko putting another goal in the back of the net.
Not three. That's two more than the quota.
That's two more than the quota. That's right. Paul Maurice says, I need just one per series from him, and he's already put up two, which is hilarious for a guy who, when he was on St. Louis, was considered to be one of the most prolific goal scorers in the league. I want one from Rodriguez. I want one from Tarasenko. Give me an Ecky slap shot that sort of leaks through. And give me Tkachuk on an empty netter. He saves the empty netter. Then he's
going for Edmonton.
Give me it's gotta be like someone random, Loki.
Adam Henrique. I agree.
Oh, Adam Henrique. No, give me Connor Brown.
All right, fine. That's a funny one. He had a point in game four, I think. Everybody had a point in game four.
Yeah.
They shared the wealth, really. So, Tucker, you and I both have the Oilers. I'm going to go ahead and say it's going to be a 4-2 Oilers win. I think it's going to be another tight one, but they'll get an empty net.
I've got an even tighter one for you, but go.
I was going to say I expect McDavid to get on the board, expect Draisaitl to get on the board. I think Darnell Nurse might get a point, but he'll still be a minus three somehow. Yeah, that's how I feel. Stuart Skinner stands on his head again, but Bobrovsky does equally as well on the other end of the ice. I think he's due for a great performance.
I think we go 3-2 Edmonton in overtime. Give McDavid the winner in OT and send Edmonton with all of that game-to-game momentum that definitely exists.
No, damn. It could. It could. Hey, we don't know. And I apologize. I just have forgotten for a moment. I didn't fully ask you guys to prepare this segment, but I did mention it before we got on the air. Does anybody have any favorite Stanley Cup moments that they could share with us? Nick, you've probably got one or two considering your team won it in 2012 and 2014. Tucker, you and I just missed out on the New Jersey dynasty, but I'll go ahead and start. So, Tucker, if you need time to think of one, and Nick, I know, has already probably got one. And this kind of just unearthed recently. I'm foggy on the year, unfortunately. I'm foggy on the year. I'm pretty sure it is the 2017 Stanley Cup Finals between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Nashville Predators, in which I'm not sure which game it was, but it was when the series was still close. It went to six games. Subban, P.K. Subban, and Sidney Crosby got in a little bit of an altercation, and P.K. Subban went to the media after the game and told everybody that Crosby said his breath was bad, and that Subban responded by saying, "I take Listerine, bro." And as funny of an interaction as that was, nobody believed that to be the true interaction. People thought it was just your average chirping in hockey. Subban going after Crosby, as someone who grew up despising Sidney Crosby, made it great. And then when Subban, after his Norris, 2 years removed from his Norris season, goes to the New Jersey Devils, just made that all the more fun. So I love that interaction. But this week, that was revealed. They had them mic'd up. PK Subban was mic'd up for that game, and they released the footage, unbeknownst to him. And they were just cursing at each other, like middle school style, just no real creativity on the chirps. And PK was a good sport about it. He was like, "Yep, you got me. Not what I had said." So that's a favorite Stanley Cup moment from recent memory that I have. That's still kind of relevant today. Nick, what do you have from us? Presumably from 2014.
It is from 2014, but talking about chirps, just real quick.
Doughty.
Connor McDavid and Bissonnette's relationship over the mic recently has just been absolutely hilarious.
It's been great. It's been great.
It's been great. The fact that we're actually seeing a little bit of Connor McDavid's personality is great. You're right. It is 2014. The fact that, you know, they did that 3-0 comeback of the Sharks in the first round was historic. But then, of course, the double OT winner. Sending Hank face planning into the ice to cry.
Alec Martinez. That was almost
my pick. Still the best. It's the best Stanley Cup game winning goal celebration I have ever seen, where he throws the hands up into the air and he's like, "Dude, you can't beat it." Alec Martinez will be an all time king, even though he won it with Vegas, which hurt my soul a little bit. But I mean, it's
so did
I
quick.
Think all time. All time. Yeah, so did, well, Quick didn't, like, play, but yeah. I thought Quick was going to win another Stanley Cup this year, and I was going to be really mad.
I never once in my mind did that possibly ever hypothetically
never
happen.
Never worried you a little bit?
I was never in doubt that they would fall to the Panthers.
Mm. All right, well, yeah, Alec Martinez. All right, Tuck, give it to us.
All right, so 2012 isn't that recent, and I was also 8 years old at the time. So yeah, we get it, Palmer. But I think my favorite memory from that Stanley Cup final was just kind of like getting to watch the Devils in that scenario, getting to watch them
awesome.
Go out in the Stanley Cup final, like watching Martin Brodeur between the pipes every night was just an absolute treat. And on like the old NBC broadcast with the old music and Doc Emmerich. Oh, it's like just all the memory is like flooding back. So maybe not like a particular memory, but like that Stanley Cup final overall just has like a, even though they lost, it still holds like a cool place in the back of my head.
Yeah, what a year that was, man. And that's one
that's a good one. And
yeah,
didn't Brodeur win the Conn Smythe? Or no, it was another goaltender that won the Conn Smythe
in 2012.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. Anyway, it'll come back.
This is American guy. Yeah.
Yeah, just some guy Johnny like fast, Slow. Like John Speed, like
Johnny
something
Speed,
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. That was, of course, Jonathan Quick, your favorite player of all time, Nick. I will dignify the response by saying his name for you. That 2012 Stanley Cup is something we can all reminisce over. You know, it didn't go our way, Tucker, but Nick, we are gracious losers. And
so happy to be there.
Oh, I'm not. I'm not.
And look, that was quite a time. Seeing Bryce Salvador score in the Stanley Cup Finals was awesome. Seeing Patrick Elias get his first Stanley Cup Finals goals since 2003 was awesome. So many memories from that. Zach Parise scoring, willing that goal into that
Love
comeback
Zach
win. He broke my heart that offseason, man. But, you know, it is what it is. These are just Stanley Cup moments, memories. You can find yourself, like, this is just three dudes talking. That's what the magic of the Stanley Cup is. We could do this for hours, but unfortunately, we're all out of time. This will be our final in-season edition of 5-on-3. We're not done for a little while longer. We got to break down the outcome of this Stanley Cup. We got to break down the offseason. We're gonna talk trades. We're going to talk contracts. We're going to talk all the
awards,
business side.
Even
so
though
Cabelli
we do
boys,
that,
put
like,
your hat on.
Every now and then.
Yeah, we know. We hop back and forth with yours. It's not that important. Yeah, we're going to talk rebrands. The Ducks got a rebrand. Utah's still got their new thing going on. The Kings got a new logo, Nick. So there's enough for us to talk
it
about.
Sucks. It sucks. Season, there's nothing special.
The season ends potentially tomorrow night with the Panthers looking for their fourth win. The Oilers could extend the series to Monday, but that will do it for the season. You'll hear more from us. But that's all from us today. For Tucker Austin, Nick Palmer, I've been James Burley. 5-on-3, it's a production of WFUV Sports.